at zoom.us.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up today, we're going to talk about the search for happiness on the first part of today's program. And then later on, we'll open up the phone lines and talk about some of the big issues in the news. Our first guest today is Dr. Phil Zuckerman. He is going to be speaking at an event this Saturday in Clearwater at the Octagon Arts Center. It's a part of the Darwin Day celebration being put on by the Tampa Bay Coalition of Reason. And Zuckerman is a renowned sociologist who researches societal conditions that lead to happiness. I spoke with him yesterday about what he found, and here's that interview. Phil Zuckerman, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're going to be in Clearwater in a few days, and you're talking on a panel about the evolution of happiness. So let's start there. You're also the author of the book Living the Secular Life. Tell me, what do you know about the evolution of happiness?
Where should I begin? What I can say is, I'll just start here. There's a long-standing prejudice, I think, in Western civilization in general, and the United States in particular, that assumes that if you're not religious, you're a dismal lout, you have no morals, you have no ethics, life has no meaning, and thus, you know, you're just glum and a miscreant and so on and so forth. The sociological and anthropological data just doesn't support that view, nor the psychological, I should say. So when we actually study non-religious people and cultures that are quite secular, levels of happiness are strong and positive, and there's a lot of data now suggesting that that people live full, rich, and content lives without religion, on average. Obviously, not everybody. And so, yeah, that's basically my area of interest. I'm not an evolutionary biologist. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm a lowly sociologist, but I'm fascinated by secular life. Not philosophical arguments over the existence of God. That's not my area, but rather people who live their lives without religion, how are they faring? Cultures now, we have now for the first time in history, we have some cultures that are predominantly non-religious, you know. Secularity has always been a marginal minority, but now we have some societies where the default position is to not believe and not be involved in religion, and it's the believers and the religious adherents that are the minority. So I'm interested in studying those cultures, and just I'll end there by saying, when you look at the happiness indexes, there's many out there, you'll find that often the most happy societies are the most secular. Denmark, Norway, the nations of Scandinavia stand out as shining, shimmering examples. So that's kind of why I think I was invited to come to Florida to talk about these things.
All right, so I was going to ask you next, what are the most secular societies? But I think you just named them, the Scandinavian countries, Norway and Denmark.
Yes and no. You know, there's three levels of religiosity that we study: belief, behavior, and belonging. When it comes to belief, Scandinavia is quite secular. When it comes to belonging, most Scandinavians will still identify as Christian or Lutheran. What they mean by that is a kind of watered-down ethnic marker. It doesn't really have to do with God or Jesus or sin or salvation, but still they identify as Lutheran. And many Scandinavians will still go to church three or four times during their life, perhaps for their baby's baptism, maybe for a teenage confirmation, maybe for a wedding, and maybe for a burial. So I would say even more secular societies today would be the Netherlands, Estonia, Czech Republic, South Korea, perhaps, China, although China's hard to gauge because the communist dictators there make the task of guessing people's religiosity a bit more difficult. But Estonia and Czech Republic definitely have the highest rates of atheists, no doubt about that. And religion is extremely marginal. Even people don't even identify per se as religious, and certainly wouldn't go to church. Scotland's up there. I think I already mentioned the Netherlands. Uruguay in Latin America has a big chunk of its population that are non-religious. So most Australia and Canada are becoming increasingly secular. But at the top of the list, I'd say the nations of Scandinavia, Estonia, Czech Republic, Slovenia's up there. Some other former Soviet nations are quite secular. Yeah, there you go. That would be my best off the top of my head.
All right, but when you name some of those Scandinavian countries, I was under the impression that some of those Scandinavian countries had state religions.
Not do some, all of them, except for Sweden, which disestablished in 2000. So yeah, it's really fascinating. Denmark has a state religion, Norway has a state religion, and Sweden did until 2000. And what that means is, yes, the religion is the official religion of the country. It is tax supported. It's written into the constitution. I know in the case of Denmark, I don't know about Norway, ruling the royalty have to be Lutheran, like the king and the queen. But what this means is that it's become largely symbolic. You can quite easily not have your taxes go to supporting the church. You just simply fill out a form, or in Norway you can go online and say, stop taxing me for this church. I want my taxes to go somewhere else. And tens of thousands of Danes and Norwegians are doing that, and Swedes as well. But what it means is that you have this kind of like cultural default religion, but in people's actual daily lives, they don't think about it at all. It's almost like just a kind of quaint. It's quaint to them, you know. So, and yet there is a kind of cultural heritage there that they enjoy, and so they don't really see the need to separate church and state on that level.
All right, so
it is a little bit paradoxical.
It is. So if there is a state religion, they're not forced to go to church, and they're not forced to support a church.
The force kind of ended in the 1800s. You know, there were times when, yeah, if you didn't show up for church, you got taxed. If you didn't show up for this, you know, you couldn't get this, job or this approval of this, you know, to purchase this piece of land or something. That's long gone. So there's no coercion at all. You never have to go. You don't have to do anything religious at all. Not any way, shape, or form.
You know, I've seen, I remember a 60 Minutes story about the Norwegians, and they seem so detached and so emotionally blank. I think Morley Safer went to Norway, and he was talking about how great things were, but they emotionally they didn't seem that happy. They danced the tango without emotion. That was one of the scenes.
Well, I'm going to talk about this when I come to Florida, but you know, anytime you talk about happiness, it's like, well, what do you mean? What does it mean to be happy? And these are culturally derived and culturally constructed concepts. I mean, happy is an adjective. Happiness kind of doesn't mean the same thing to an Italian as it means to an Icelander or a Bolivian, and Americans have a particularly, I think, you know, bizarre concept of happiness. I mean, for us, happiness is this sort of exuberant joy. I don't know, there was that famous song, I think, by Pharrell Williams, you know, like, I'm happy, mm-hmm. And the video just shows people, you know, dancing, literally dancing in the streets with this, you know, and so, no, not every culture thinks of happiness as this, like, you know, exuberant, joyful, you know, over the moon. In fact, in Denmark, for example, you don't really express happiness. Even the word lugli, it means almost a kind of, it's something you might experience on a snowy winter's day when your tea is ready and you bite into a nice, you know, warm, you know, baked good, and you're kind of cozy and comfortable. I mean, it's more of about contentment. It's a good inner feeling. It's not this exuberant. And so, yes, I agree. I've lived in Scandinavia for 2 years, and yeah, when you walk down the street, people are not overly overly expressive in their happiness. When you walk into a grocery store, people aren't saying, "Hi, how are you?" When you're hiking in the woods, people don't, you know, greet you if they don't know you. So it's kind of like the American notion of happiness is not universal. So what we can say, though, is that if we talk about contentment or well-being, it's very strong and deep in Scandinavia. But you're absolutely right. The Scandinavians are not, dancing in the streets with big smiles. And even if they're dancing the tango, like you said, they tend to be a little bit more staid in their disposition and demeanor.
We're talking with Phil Zuckerman, who is a professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California. He's the author of several books, including Living the Secular Life and Faith No More. He'll be speaking this weekend at the Clearwater Unitarian Church on Nursery Road on a panel about the evolution of happiness. So how do they measure happiness? And you touched on that a moment ago, but when these surveys come out and they name some of these countries as the happiest on earth, are they measuring contentment? Are they measuring that folks are not in debt, or that there's a low divorce rate? Or what do they measure?
Yeah. good question. So you have many different surveys that approach this topic in many different ways, using various tools at their beck and call. So some might ask people sort of more objective measures. You know, have you experienced a crime in the last month? Are you worried about your finances? Are you content with their government? I mean, it's kind of, but they may ask more subjective ones, like, how happy have you felt in the last week on a scale of 1 to 10? How happy are you about your life on a scale of 1 to 10? And so most of specifically, the ones that measure those larger things like have you experienced a crime, those tend to be more human development indexes, social progress indexes, but the ones that are just these happiness indexes, which I'm not a huge fan of because as a sociologist, like I said, what it means to be happy is not objective, it's very subjective, but on these subjective scales of just simply asking people, are you happy? Have you been happy in the last week? How happy have you been in the last month? People can just respond. Now, the question is, how does happy get translated into the native language of the person being asked? Because these are obviously not all being done in English. So you first have to figure out what is the proper translation of that term into a given language. And again, that's not always so easy. And then what those people mean when they hear that word is not going to be the same thing universally. So that's just the hazards of the trade. Social science is not an exact science, and we do the best we can.
Hmm. A lot of these countries you mentioned, the Scandinavian countries and Australia and Canada, a lot of them have a very strong social safety net that you're not, for instance, if you have a major health care need, you're not going to go into bankruptcy like somebody here in the U.S. might.
Absolutely.
What role does a social safety net play in happiness?
A huge, ginormous, massive watermelon roll. We've got tons of data showing the strong correlation between these things. Societies that have a couple things in common. So a strong welfare safety net, that's correct. Universal health care, access to affordable housing, access to affordable, if not free, education. So that in the sense that life is generally secure, that even if you lose your job, even if your kid can't get through high school or college, even that that their existential security, like they're not going to be starving in the streets, they're going to have health care, they're going to have a roof over their head, they're going to have access to education should they want it, job training should they want it. So these things all make life a lot less precarious, a lot more comfortable, and a lot more safe and sane. But the other factor is inequality. We have a lot of data. Social psychologists have found that the more inequality and the more acute the inequality is in society, the more unhappy people are. They are agitated, aggravated, angry, frustrated, life is miserable. And the Scandinavian nations not only are among the wealthiest in the world, and not only do they have the most expansive welfare safety net in the history of capitalism, but they are the most equal societies on planet Earth, meaning the gap between rich and poor is the smallest. And so what you find is this creates trust in society, it creates a comfort in society, and this comes, a lot of the data was captured in that a best-selling book called The Spirit Level by Wilkinson and his co-author, where they really just correlate how inequality is correlated with a host of social maladies, whereas higher equality creates for a much more content population. So yes, the strong, expansive welfare state does much to make life better and decrease suffering and enhance well-being, and so does an emphasis on economic equality. Be sure, these are strongly correlated with happiness.
And are the crime rates universally low in all those places? Are people shooting each other and murdering each other at the rate that we see here in the U.S.?
No, not even close. The murder rate is 5 times higher in the U.S. than in Scandinavia. Yeah, no, these nations have the lowest violent crime rates in the world, and they've gotten even lower since the advent of the welfare state. So they were already, so there's just no question that and I talk about this a lot in my work, where people say, oh, without religion, there's no morality and everybody will just start killing each other. Well, the facts on the ground don't illustrate that. The facts on the ground show that actually it's among the more secular societies on Earth where we have the lowest violent crime rates. Now, it's not just because they're secular. It's because they've addressed the root causes of their social problems, and they've made life more comfortable and more safe, and so well-being goes up, distrust and hostility goes down, and crime goes down when you have an expansive, extensive welfare state. When you take the best of capitalism, you know, competition, a profit motive, a private ownership, a risk, when you combine that with the best of socialism, which would include, you know, sort of basic rights for everybody and not just civil rights, but, you know, human rights, when everybody has health care, everybody has affordable housing, everybody has access to an education, everybody has access to job opportunities and job training, then what you find is this winning combination of increased well-being and decreased suffering, and thus violence goes way, way down.
We're talking with Phil Zuckerman, who will be speaking at the Unitarian Church in Clearwater this Saturday at 10 a.m. as part of a panel on the evolution of happiness. He's written many books, including Society Without God and Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. So, Phil, when I hear that, I hear other people say, well, you're giving up your liberty if you live in one of these societies that have a strong social safety net. You give up your freedom, and you're now a slave to the nanny state, and whatever this nanny state tells you, you've got to do that. So you're basically a cog in society. You've given up any sort of creativity or freedom.
Yeah, they've clearly never been to Scandinavia. These are among the most creative and dynamic societies on planet Earth, whether it's, you know, architectural design to artistic innovation to technological advancements. I mean, these places are extremely creative, extremely dynamic. They're at the forefront of much of innovation, whether it's economic, technological, environmental. I mean, these places are just like oozing with advances on all levels. And in terms of giving up freedoms, I don't really know what that means. In fact, it's enhanced. When you're not worrying about how to pay a bill when you break your leg or lose a tooth or have an aneurysm, I mean, healthcare is tax subsidized for all. Everybody has access to excellent healthcare. I had a child born there. I've experienced the whole process. Like, I had an eye infection. I mean, I had three kids there. Like, so you've got this wonderful healthcare system. So I don't quite, wonderfully subsidized child care, right? Wonderfully subsidized elder care. So I didn't see anybody giving up any freedoms. And in fact, quite the opposite. I felt much freer there because I could walk through town at night and not have the lingering fear that I was going to be shot or robbed. I didn't see any homeless people anywhere, so I didn't feel this nagging sense of like desperation in the streets as one feels walking around Los Angeles, where there's just people living such marginal lives, you don't even know how they make it through every cold night. So, yeah, this notion that you're giving up freedom, I think this is just a strange and bizarre. I mean, I'll give you an example in terms of safety. Here in Los Angeles, parents are terrified to let their children walk to or from school because they're scared their kids will be abducted or killed or shot or kidnapped. But parents are terrified to let their child, you know, I've had friends come over, their baby's asleep in the car, and they're mortified that the car is parked in front of my house because they're like, well, can I leave my baby out there? You know, it's like, you know, hey, that's your call. Well, this is just not even part of the on people's minds in Scandinavia. You would never think, you know, my children, when they went to elementary school, I was the only parent that went to the school to walk my kid home. All these third and second graders are walking themselves home. They knew how to get on the bus. They knew how to get, you know, and there wasn't this fear, this lingering fear that, you know, lurking behind every corner is some madman with a gun. So I actually feel much less free here in the United States because I'm always worried about violence, whereas there I just didn't have that feeling. But in terms of the nanny state, yes, it's true. They insist that you take a vacation every year. Now you're free not to, but if you don't take that vacation, you may get docked $1,000 or something. So you have choices, but there is a notion there that people have obligations to their fellow citizens, and that's going to come in the way of progressive taxation so that everybody has a place to sleep, access to education, and access to a doctor. And some see that as a high price to pay. I see that as an incredibly sane and rational way to organize a contemporary society.
So getting back to the state religion in some of these countries, that resulted in people not really practicing much religion. And then here in the U.S., we've got this First Amendment that indicates to us that there will be no official government religion, and we're not, at least the way I interpret it, and many people interpret it, you're not forced to practice religion. You don't have to. So we've got this First Amendment that gives us ultimate freedom of belief or disbelief, and they've got amendments over there that say, well, such and such religion will be our state religion, but how did we end up being so religious over here and they ended up being so non-religious over there?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It's one of those like law, sociological laws of unintended policy consequences. I mean, who would have thought? If you look at the founding of the United States and the founding of modern Denmark back in the 1800s, you'd think, and you read their frameworks, their constitutional frameworks, you'd think we would be the most secular society and they'd be swimming in Lutheranism, when in fact the opposite happened. That First Amendment actually made it so that religion was a free-for-all here. In other words, there was no state-subsidized religion. So if you wanted to have a church, you had to, like, sink or swim on your own. We give you tax-exempt status, which saves billions of dollars a year for the religious, but beyond that, you got to pay your own electric bill and your own gas bill, and you got to pay your own preacher's salary. So if you want to have a church, it's more competitive. You're on your own. You have to be more innovative. So what this actually did was it created a kind of free and open economic religious economy, as it were, where religions are competing for customers, and they advertise and they do what they can to get people in. And plus, religion became, because we're such a diverse society, religion became a place of sanctuary for people and a place of community for people. And then you go back to Scandinavia. Well, with religion being run by the government, pastors are paid by the government, church buildings are subsidized by taxes, the religions got a little bit old and lazy. They didn't have to fight for quote-unquote customers or adherents, and they just got set in their ways, and they just plugged along as the modern world passed them by. And plus, people don't need religion in Scandinavia to find community or to feel like they're part of something. So there's a lot of factors at play, but I just love it because it just shows that you never quite know what's going to be the result of things. And in fact, when evangelicals in America, they want more religion, they want government more religious, I always think, you know, be careful what you wish for, because actually, the more religious the government gets, that doesn't always work well for religion. And we're seeing this right now with in the Trump era, where evangelicals becoming a dirty word, because they see that, well, it was the evangelicals that got Trump into office. It was the evangelicals that supported that racist homophobe more in Alabama. And people are starting to be turned off by Christianity Christians are now running the country. They're Trump's cabinet. Evangelical Christians are heading the White House, and it's not doing so well. So maybe I've gone off on a little tangent here, but I'll just end by saying, yes, sometimes when you have a state government subsidized religion, that doesn't mean the people become religious. If anything, it means they can kind of ignore it, deride it, and be turned off by it. But here in the United States, because of that First Amendment, because we have no Church of the United States, religion has actually more freedom to more organically spread and grow and develop.
Phil Zuckerman is our guest. He's a professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California, and he'll be speaking this Saturday in Clearwater, Saturday morning in Clearwater at the Unitarian Church. Phil, one last question. The president the other day expressed a preference for people immigrating here from Norway and not from those S-hole countries, and I think he was referring to places in Africa and Haiti and Central America. Is it likely, in your experience, that there would be a heavy demand for people from Norway and Scandinavian countries to come here because life is better here than it is over there?
There was a time when that was the case. In fact, in the 1800s, we saw one of the largest population migrations in the history of the world. Many Swedes and Norwegians picked up and moved to places like Minnesota and Wisconsin and the Dakotas and all over the United States. It was massive. I don't know if it was as high as one-third, but I've heard estimates that almost a third of the Norwegians and Swedes picked up and left in the 1800s for a better life, because life was harsh back then in Scandinavia. It was cold, it was hungry, it was unequal. But a lot's have changed there. In four or five generations, they've created the most prosperous and egalitarian societies the world has ever known. So now I think you're only going to get a Scandinavian coming to the United States because perhaps for the weather, or they fell in love with an American, or for a job prospect. But no, you're not going to see mass immigration because they have it so good there. They're the wealthiest nations, the most equal nations, the most prosperous, the most peaceful. So we do not see this huge clamoring of Scandinavians Scandinavians trying to get into the United States with its high murder rate, its crappy, non-subsidized health care, extremely expensive college. I mean, I've got three kids right now. The price tag for college in this country is in the quarter of millions, and they have free education all the way up through law school and medical school. It's all free. So, no, the Scandinavians that I have, while they love the United States and they enjoy visiting and they might enjoy doing a sabbatical here and they certainly love the weather and they certainly love the fast food and whatnot, they're not clamoring to leave their societies. But let's not forget, in the end, Rob, that statement by Trump was just a simply deeply racist comment that is just a string of racist comments that comes out of that a white supremacist mouth.
Phil Zuckerman, that's all I was going to ask you. In the minute or so that we have left, you want to add anything?
I hope to see meet a lot of people. I've never been to Florida, so I'm looking forward to coming. And I think it's an important topic. Human happiness and human well-being are things we should be concerned about, especially on Darwin Day. These are topics that I'm just excited to be participating in and discussing.
Well, Phil, I think you're going to like Florida. This is the best time of year to come, the next few months.
Oh, great, great. I'm happy to hear it.
All right. Well, Phil Zuckerman, thanks a lot. Author of Living the Secular Life here in Clearwater on Saturday, talking about the evolution of happiness. Phil, thanks.
Thank you, Rob.
That was Phil Zuckerman, who is a professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California. He's the author of several books, including Faith No More, and he'll be speaking at the Unitarian Church, also known as the Octagon Arts Center, this Saturday at 10 a.m., that's on Nursery Road in Clearwater. It's an event put on by the Tampa Bay Coalition of Reason. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. You can comment about this show, and we're going to open up the phone lines for the next half hour. You can comment about what you've heard here in the first 20 minutes or so by calling us up at 813-239-9663. You can also email your comments into the studio, as Deborah did. I'm going to read her comment in just a moment. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Deborah writes, the country depicted on that 60 Minutes segment was Finland and not Norway. So, Deborah, thanks. My memory was not good. I knew it was a Scandinavian country, but Deborah, thank you for correcting me. We're going to talk a little bit, too, about the whole controversy over the Russia investigation. There's some news on that, and I'm just going to look at the NBC website and the story out this morning. And this is a pretty fresh story. We've been hearing the NPR news and the MNF news this morning about this, but there's a news story out that might be alarming to many people. Let me read it. President Trump has been talking to his friends about possibly asking Attorney General Jeff Sessions to prosecute Robert Mueller, the special counsel overseeing the Russia probe, and his team. This is according to NBC News reporting this morning. The revelation appears in a news analysis piece written by Howard Feynman, an NBCNews.com contributor and an analyst for MSNBC. Feynman quotes an unnamed Trump advisor as saying, "Here's how it would work. We're sorry, Mr. Mueller, you won't be able to run the federal grand jury today because he has to go to testify to another federal grand jury. It's unclear what charges Mueller could possibly face in such a situation." An unidentified friend of Trump added, "According to the article, I think the president has been convinced that firing Mueller would not only create a firestorm, it would play right into Mueller's hands because it would give Mueller the moral high ground." The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comments. So you can find more about that on the NBC News website this morning. Trump reportedly talking about asking Attorney General Sessions to prosecute Special Counsel Mueller. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. The latest on the release of the memos is the potential release of a House committee's classified memo has the FBI in a remarkable public clash with the White House. The FBI says it has grave concerns about the accuracy of that House memo, which involves the committee's investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Further complicating the memo's release, the top Democrat on the committee says its vote to release the memo is invalid because Republicans altered the memo secretly. The agency's stance escalates the dispute and means President Trump will be openly defying his handpicked FBI director by continuing to push for the memo's release. It also suggests a clear willingness by FBI Director Christopher Wray to challenge a president who just months ago fired his predecessor, James Comey. So that story from the AP. And we're getting some emails in. No phone calls yet. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. This interesting story came out earlier this week that has not really been reported here in the U.S., but I thought it was interesting enough to mention, so I'll do that right now. This is from a Dutch newspaper. It's called Volkskrant, and the newspaper says, Dutch agencies provided crucial intel about Russia's interference in the U.S. elections. Hackers from the Dutch intelligence service, AIVD, have provided the FBI with crucial information about Russian interference with the American elections. For years, AIVD had access to the infamous Russian hacker group Cozy Bear. That's what the newspaper De Volkskrant and Newswer have uncovered in their investigation. We're going to hear a short report from the Dutch newspaper site Volkskrant. This is what they say Dutch intelligence was able to do. Really interesting and not really widely reported at all. Certainly not reported in this country. Listen up to this.
As Russian hackers attack the Democratic Party in the U.S., they're unaware that other hackers are spying on them. And those other hackers are watching every preparation they make. They have not only dug themselves into the computer network being used, they even have access to their security camera. That's how they observe that members of the Russian Secret Service are involved with the hacks. There's observations made from Zoetermeer in the Netherlands, home to the Dutch Secret Service, as is now disclosed by Dutch newspaper De Volkskrant and current affairs show Nieuwsuur. It's the Dutch who've provided the US with evidence of Russian interference in the elections. Relevant material to special counsel Robert Mueller, who's not only investigating possible ties between Russia and the Trump campaign, but also the Russian hacks. It all starts in the summer of 2014, when a hacker employed by Dutch intelligence service AIVD gains access to the computer network of a university building close to Moscow's Red Square. It's the building from where the infamous Russian hacker group Cozy Bear attacks governments and companies all over the world. The Dutch are watching when Cozy Bear plans an attack on the American State Department in November of 2014. As the hackers are about to execute their plan, the Dutch warn their American counterparts. Still, the Russians are partly successful. Once inside, they manage to send an email from the State Department to someone in the White House. He trusts the email, seemingly from the State Department, clicks on a link, and fills in login credentials. Those are now obtained by the Russians, and that's how they infiltrate the White House. The Dutch see all of this happening, and each time they inform their American colleagues. Again, when Cozy Bear attacks the Democratic Party in 2015. And this information, confirmed intelligence sources to the Volkskrant and Nieuwsuur, is one of the reasons why the FBI starts an investigation into Russian interference with the US presidential elections. President Trump, among others, refuses to explicitly acknowledge that the Russians were behind the attack on the Democratic Party. But based on the Dutch information, the American intelligence agencies state with high confidence that this is in fact the case.
Well, that's a report from Dutch media from really coming out of De Volkskrant, which is a Dutch newspaper. And I'll send you the video of that if you want to see it. Just email me at dj@wmnf.org. But, you know, we've been told, especially by Fox News the past few weeks, that the entire Russia investigation came out of this dossier that a British spy was paid in part by the Democrats to come up with. But here's Dutch media telling us that they were able to hack into Cozy Bear, the Russian hacker group, and then monitor what Cozy Bear was doing going back to 2014. And they realized that Cozy Bear was try to get involved in the White House, the State Department, and the Democratic Party in that story. So really interesting stuff there. Not reported at all here in the U.S., but you can find it online pretty easily. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Bob in Largo writes, I cannot buy the Scandinavian reference that your guest brought up. It's homogenous, ethnic, and such a small population. I'll stick to American capitalist hypocrisy and criticism by itself, writes Bob in Largo. All right. Bob saying, I guess we've got nothing to learn from Scandinavia. 813-239-9663. Let's go to George, who's in Lakeland. By the way, Frank Knox is our phone producer today. George, you're on. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, well, on the topic of Norway and Scandinavian countries, if you go to YouTube, you will see a lot of YouTubers that live in Scandinavia, and they talk about their country. There's this one woman, a French black woman who married a male Scandinavian, and she talks about how being black and how it is to be black in Scandinavia. And
how is it? What happens?
She
to
says
her?
there's some racism, but it's a lot more than what she gets at in France. You know, so she talks about prices. She talks about health care, her prices of food. So it's real good insight.
Well, is it a positive experience for her or a negative experience?
It's hard to tell. She has different videos, and sometimes it sounds like it's positive. Sometimes it sounds like it's negative. She says, you know, they're not really friendly people to her. But now that the sociologists explained that, you know, that they don't really greet you. They don't express happiness like we do here, where we're smiling and in your face, shaking hands. Just over there, you walk in somewhere and nobody greets you. They don't even say hi.
I've never been to Scandinavia, but I always got that listening to Garrison Keillor's show that Norwegians are pretty diffident people and don't have much to say and are not.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what she said. And she's really outgoing, happy, and she said that, you know, that she has to get used to. So it's like a mixed review for her, but she's there, so I guess that means, you know, she likes it.
All right. Well, George, thanks. We'll have to look up those videos.
Yeah. It's pretty neat.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, George. All right. Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663. Jack writes this. If it is true that Trump wants Sessions to prosecute Mueller, it boggles my mind. That's what we expect in dictatorships. Why the Republicans are letting him get away with this is going to trouble many historians in the future, writes Jack, who's in Palm Harbor. Yeah, referring to the NBC report that the president is asking Sessions to prosecute Mueller. And that just came out this morning. That's brand news. 813-239-9663 is our number. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Rex in St. Pete. Hi, Rex. You're on. What would you like to talk about?
Good day, Rob.
Hi, Rex.
It's interesting, all the mouthwash that comes out of the White House. It's the only way I can describe it on the air politely. It's a constant banter in you ask the question, why do the Republicans put up with it? Well, this has been their goal. They didn't realize it was going to be Donald Trump, in my estimation, that was going to give them complete control to take away all of the services that they are. I mean, you know, from the EPA, education, just keep naming it. And they're doing it while what I call Trump, the great distractor, the supreme distractor, actually, just keeps distracting everything.
Yeah, or we let ourselves be distracted. I mean, sometimes I think we just give too much time to Trump. I mean, it is for maybe Rex, for you and me. I don't know how old you are, but
I'm your age.
Yeah, so we've seen a few presidents. This is the craziest, I'm not using that in a judgmental way. Although I disagree with almost probably 90% of what the president does. But this is the craziest president ever.
It is. And then you have the far-right banter of saying, Well, you know, why do we listen to, you know, Hollywood personalities? Why do we listen to athletes? Why do we listen to the elitists? But yet, the guy that they believe in so highly is an elite Hollywood insider that was a slumlord. I mean, it's incredible.
And I think you could make the argument that he inherited his money. He could have done better had he just invested it in an S&P 500 index fund. And he doesn't really build things. He puts his name on things, and he sells his naming rights. But that's not really building stuff.
It goes behind the scenes of the question of why will the Republicans allow this to happen?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see if our Republican friends will call up and tell us why.
I have some, and they don't have answers, but I'll be looking forward to see if somebody does it on the air. Thanks for taking my comment.
All right, Rex, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. This is Radioactivity. Let's take some more phone calls. Barbara's been holding for a while. Hi, Barbara, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
I'd like to comment on your email, Rob, from the gentleman that doesn't believe that we've been hacked, and he'd rather believe intelligence or whatever information he receives from the United States, and isn't probably even willing to look into this report about, is it Cozy Bears?
Yeah, you know, I think he was referring more, though, to the interview with the sociologist who says that the people in Scandinavia are happier. I think that's what he was referring to. I haven't read an email yet this morning.
It didn't sound like that to me.
Okay, all right.
It just sounded like arrogant, ignorant, John Wayne type of an attitude that's going to get us in a lot of trouble, and I'm concerned, so that's all I have to say.
And Barbara, I know they're out there. I know there are some people that, you know, as I read that Dutch report and as we heard that Dutch report, I'm sure they're skeptical, and let's hope they call in.
I mean, I think this is just a mess. Our whole government is a mess. Really, really, you pay these guys and they don't accomplish anything except no good. And it's really a shame that it's come to this. So,
Barbara, do you have a lot of friends who share your view?
I do. I do. I definitely do.
All right. Well, Barbara, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Great. Bye. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Sam in Seminole. Hi, Sam. You're on WMNF. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Hi, Rob. First of all, I just wanted to say that your previous caller, I meet a lot of people during the course of the day, and I do meet a lot of people that have that same sentiment. And I somewhat have it, but I just had a question for you. If I were to email you at the station, would you or anyone be able to give me some websites that for me, that because I want to get politically active, even though I vote, I want to be a political activist. A little bit deeper than I am now. Would I be able to get some guidance through some websites that you all maybe could suggest?
Well, let's talk about openly. I mean, I love newspapers. I think newspapers have some of the best reporting out there. And I don't always agree with the editorial pages, but I love what hardworking journalists do. There's a great report out this week by the Tampa Bay Times and WTSP, by investigative journalists looking into what they call zombie campaigns. And it'll when you read the story, you'll say, wow, I didn't know this was happening.
Yeah.
So I would start with newspapers. That's where I would start. And then depending on what your political philosophy is, there's lots of great conservative websites. If you're a conservative, I'd go to Drudge first. If you're a liberal, you might try Huffington Post first, but, it depends on what you're looking for.
Okay. And as far as independence go,
if you're looking for,
you can suggest,
If you're looking for kind of straight down the middle, I'd go back to the newspapers, because the newspapers are equal opportunity offenders. If they see a Democrat screwing up, they'll go after the Democrat. If they see a Republican screwing up, they'll go after the Republican. So that's where I would start if you're looking for independence.
Well, that's perfect. And that's why I listen to your show and the entire station, and I appreciate it, Rob.
All right, Sam, thanks a lot. Thank you. And I'm going to read just a few more of these emails before we go back to the phones. Let's see which one I haven't read here. Charles in Tampa says, yes, we pay too much attention to Trump. We should stop feeding his ego. The best way to deal with a bully like him is to ignore him, writes Charles in Tampa. Greg writes this, I just turned in and missed most of the interview with Professor Zuckerman. My wife and I will be vacationing in Scandinavia this summer. When will the program be on the archive so I can listen from the start? Thanks for doing such a great job. Greg, it's going to be on the archives within the hour. So you can go back to the archives and listen to the interview with my guest, Dr. Phil Zuckerman, who's a professor of sociology and an expert on happiness, and he believes that one of the keys to happiness is to try to get away from religion. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Lisa, who's in Lakewood Ranch. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for hanging on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Is this Mitch or Rob?
It's Rob.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say very quickly that I watched a little bit about what Bernie Sanders said yesterday, talking about how he wants people to get more involved, right? Well, you know, the big distraction is that they're taking over, you know, corporately. Obviously, we have this horrible thing that says that anybody who has a corporation can spend as much money as they want. He's talking about them and the Koch brothers and so on throwing $400 million some dollars at the election next time, which is, you know, Supreme Court sanctioned now, I suppose. It's just a very troublesome thing. Now, getting back to the environment, I feel like what is happening is that all the time that we watch the news, we're hearing about Trump this and Trump that. Meanwhile, the corporations are out there just trashing the environment. And what can we do about it? I mean, people talk and talk and talk, but maybe it's a good thing that Trump, you know, there is some good coming out of this, that Trump has gotten elected, because it's going to wake us up, you know, to what's happening. They just want to, you know, do whatever they want with the environment. And really, I think a lot of us just feel kind of helpless.
Well, you know, Lisa, I don't think you should feel helpless. I think there's a lot of ways that you can get involved. I mean, the first step is to talk to your member of Congress's office, or talk to your legislative offices locally there.
Like Vern Buchanan, for instance, not to mention
any
names.
You know, I don't know if you're in the district where the election is, but you've got an election in 2 weeks for a state House seat. Or is it a state Senate seat where Buchanan's son is running against a woman named Good?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, get involved in that election. Tell your friends, if you're in that district, that this election is important.
Well, you know, I mean, there are little things that people can do, and I guess what I want to say is do those little things, right? Shouldn't we try to do those little things, right?
Absolutely.
Write
and don't feel,
you know, and try to keep people pointed towards the fact that we really do need to reduce fossil fuels, and we really do need to go greener. You know, we're trying, but maybe, you know, it could be more.
Well, you're not powerless. The country is changing. I mean, the whole world is changing. The whole world, I think, with the exception of the Trump White House, and maybe the Republican side in Congress, thinks that we should be burning fewer fossil fuels.
Climate agreement, you know, the climate accord or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a big slap in the face to the rest of the world.
Well, it's a marathon. It's not just one battle.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
Just not just a short 100-yard race.
Yeah,
you've got to stay in it for the
you.
Long run.
Yeah, thank you for thank you for trying to keep us focused on the important issues.
All right. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for calling. And don't give up hope.
One more thing. I know that you want more Republicans to call in, right?
Sure. But, we take all sides.
I think what happens is they're not focused on the important issues. And, you know, maybe they should listen more to public radio.
Well, I know we've got a lot of Republican listeners out there. So, Lisa, thanks a lot. Hopefully they'll call in.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I wish some of them were more people that I knew. But, you know, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you. Gina writes this. So the Republican leadership in Congress say they're releasing an FBI memo, but the agency says it's misleading without the context. It sounds like some Republican senators are adopting Trump's tactics of smearing the messenger, the FBI in this case. You can make anything sound like you want to if you are dishonest by taking it out of context. It sounds like they seized on one little piece that helps Trump slime out of his role in the obstruction issue. What is disturbing is the lack of protest over this kind of thing, especially when the FBI leadership, a Trump appointee, is loudly protesting. I don't know what the calls are coming into Senator Rubio's office or going into Vern Buchanan's office or Gus Bilirakis's office. I don't know what they're like going into Kathy Castor's office. I suspect some people who are really in favor of releasing the memo are calling, and some people opposed to it are calling. That's one thing. I wonder why the Democrat, if the Republican memo is going to be released, why the Democratic memo won't also be released. Apparently, the Democratic memo answers point by point the Republican memo. Republican memo that the president's going to release today is about 4 pages. The Democratic memo is about 10 pages. I'd like to read both if they're going to release them. Anyway, what do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And Lisa, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Rosemary in Tampa. Hi, Rosemary. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to mention what you did about the Democratic memo that they voted down. They don't want to show it. But you had already talked about that.
Yeah, it seems really unfair, doesn't it? Because at least Congressman Schiff has read all the background information. Congressman Nunes has not read any of the background information.
Yep.
So, and that's partly because Nunes is out of it. He's not even supposed to be involved in this investigation at all. So
yeah, it's all weird. I mean, I'm a registered Republican. I have voted Republican my entire life, except for this gentleman that now sits in the office. I just could not bring myself to do it. And I mean, I just want to say to people out there, it's just frustrating to really, really see that people are just picking a side and they're just sticking to it. And it's like nobody wants to move or, you know, give an inch. And I'm losing hope in this country. This is actually, it's killing me. I mean, really, because I keep hearing like Joe Kennedy, his address, there's hope, don't panic. It's going to be okay. And I want to believe that, but I mean, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, if I'm innocent and there's an investigation, I think that I would welcome it so that you could prove my innocence and let's get on with passing laws and governing and doing what we're supposed to do. Instead, so when he does everything that he can to like stop this investigation, that to me, it confirms that he's guilty of something. I don't know what it is, but it seems to me that he's going way out of the way to really hide something damaging.
Well, Rosemary, I think you hit it on the head. I think you said it exactly perfectly. You should have nothing to fear from an investigation. In fact, you should welcome it because you'd like to clear the air. There's been so many rumors that why not have? And you know, I've got a high school friend who ended up going to work for the FBI, and I know a few guys in the FBI. They're not liberals. They might be moderates, but they're certainly not flaming liberals. My friend who I went to high school with is a Republican.
Right.
Well,
look, I'm retired military. I'm a wounded war veteran. I am a patriot. And I consider everybody who's an American citizen a patriot. And that's another thing. You know, if you're not a Republican for Trump, it's like you're not a patriot. What kind of junk is that? Since when? And I just want to point out, I never like when, of course, the president and his people always got to be talking about, well, Obama this or Hillary that. You know, well, I'm not going to say something, you know, about Obama. When Mr. Trump and his people were in the birther movement, never once did I hear President Obama tweet complaining about it, calling him names or saying, oh, my God, it was a witch hunt. They're after me. Never. This man remained cool and calm because he knew these people are like barking up the wrong tree. They're searching for something. That was a witch hunt.
All right, Rosemary, thanks a lot. Thank you so much. You said so many wonderful things. Thank you for calling, too. All right. And we just want to get one more caller on. Let's go to Mike in Bradenton. Mike, we've got 25 seconds. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Great show as always. I just wanted to ask, how do you see this all unfolding? Is Trump going to remain in office until the end of this term, or do you see him being removed in some fashion?
I think he stays in office. I think he stays in office until the next presidential election. Absolutely. Yeah,
wow.
That's how I see it. Yeah. All right, Mike. Thanks a lot. But that doesn't mean that there won't be a whole lot of intrigue, including if he decides to fire Mueller or if he decides to six sessions on Mueller. I think there have been a lot of game changers. That would be a huge earthquake. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Mitch Perry. He's coming up next on the Midpoint program. This is WM.